Snap to John. John backpedals. Plenty of time. He's moving to his left. Shuffling. All kinds of time. Now the heat comes. He's got to run to the right. John Beck is on the run. He throws behind him. It is caught for the touchdown! Johnny Harleen got it for the score! Harleen by himself in the end zone! The Cougars win it! On the final play of the game!
It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shop podcast, episode 211. I am your host, Adam Mangum. We are joined by former BYU and NFL quarterback John Beck. He comes back to the podcast to discuss Taysom's upcoming decision and also Tanner's excellent freshman season. Matt and I then discuss the victory over Utah State. We break down BYU's potential opponents in the Las Vegas Bowl, and we discuss the college football playoff. This week's podcast is sponsored by my upcoming epic fantasy novel, Peak Crosser. You can find out about how to crowdfund the novel at adamjmangum.com. This is the Rise and Shout podcast. Get your Cougar news at CougarFan.com. Follow us on Facebook at Facebook.com/Rise and Shout. And listen to us right now. Welcoming back to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, former BYU, NFL, and CFL quarterback, John Beck. John, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
So one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is it's been an interesting year for BYU quarterbacks. Obviously, Taysom started the year, senior year, lots of hype, and unfortunately got hurt. And then Tanner Mangum, who nobody expected would play much this year, was forced into duty. So let's start with Taysom. You've dealt with injuries in your career. When you saw that or heard that Taysom was hurt and was going to be out for the season, what were your thoughts when you found that out?
You know, I'm sure like every other BYU fan, just sick to my stomach to see Taysom having to go through that again. Just, you know, with the type of player that he is and what happened last year with an injury, and then to know that it's his senior year and here it is, the first game of the season, and he was having a great game. I was so impressed with the way that he was playing through three quarters, and what a bright future that the senior year was going to be. And then all of a sudden, boom, he's walking off the field with that injury. I just, you know, it's one of those times where you just can't even believe what you're seeing. And then when it came out that he had to list Frank and he was going to miss this whole senior year, it was just, my heart sunk for the guy.
Yeah, it was, I think you just encapsulated what every BYU fan felt then. You know, he's already rehabbed once. Obviously, if he wants to play football again in college and or the pros, he's going through that again. What kind of advice, I'm sure you've talked to other quarterbacks and maybe even to Taysom, but I won't put you on the spot with that, but what kind of advice do you give to somebody that, like you, has had to decide, you know, are we going to keep doing this, or is this the right thing? What kind of advice do you give to somebody in a situation like that?
Well, it's a hard situation to be in, because one of the things that makes a player a great competitor is that never give up, never give in attitude. And when you're holding on to your dreams, trying to make a decision, do I get to keep pursuing my dream, or is my dream, like, is it over with? Is it time for me to move on in life? That's a difficult spot to be in. And, you know, most people, they seek advice from others, people that have been in the same experience. They have to weigh their options. They have to weigh the risk and reward of the situation. If I keep playing, you know, what is it going to benefit here? And at times, you have to look for what's the future going to be. And, you know, Taysom was a great player. He'll always be remembered as a great player. And it's really tough that he has to be in that situation, because I know that he's having to find a way and find the answers to the difficult questions in life of, do I stop doing what I'm doing now and do something else? And that's hard as a player, because most of us guys that have, you know, when you play collegiate football, you've been doing it since you were a little kid. And that has been your main focus since you were sometimes 7, 8, 9 years old. And then all of a sudden, you're having to make a decision that you didn't anticipate making that soon in your life. And it can be difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you, it's impossible to do this because, of course, you had a different trajectory than he did and had some good health in college. But, I mean, would you say to somebody that still had a lot of time and was young enough to rehab to do it and do it? Or do you think that's just, it's too complicated a decision to have simple advice like that?
Well, no, I mean, the thing I always say to anybody, you know, there's a lot of guys that have to make that decision. It may not be because of injuries. It may be because of just team situations. There's a lot of times in the NFL where you have teammates that you've seen have had to work through a lot of different situations, and then all of a sudden they start to have a family, and they have a wife, and they have kids, and they're looking at, man, the path that I am on right now is one that causes me to bounce around a lot, and I just don't know if I want to keep doing that. Or some guys are in situations where it's their body. They're just like, you know, I can keep doing this for 2 or 3 more years, but I don't know if my body can hold up that long. So you're, but I tell all of them, listen, when football is over, it is over. When your playing days are done, they are done. So I always tell everybody, if you have a desire to keep going, seek that out. Like, you got to, like, you got to give it a chance. Because I can't imagine walking away from a sport feeling like, I wonder if I would have just given it one more season, what could have happened? You know, I kind of ran into this 2 years ago when I spent a year out of the NFL, and I kind of looked at the situation saying, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get back on an NFL team. I don't really have a lot of coaches with a lot of connections to me that are still in, that it could be a possible option. And yet, I don't know if I'm ready to be done yet. And that's why I went up to Canada. So, you know, Taysom's in a spot. A lot of guys have been in spots where it's, what am I going to do? My advice is always give it everything you can to pursue that dream if it is playing. Because once that's gone, then it's a normal life. It's finding a job, and you're not in the routine that you've loved your entire life. You don't get to wake up in the morning thinking about training or practice. You know, you wake up in the morning thinking about a job you go to.
Yeah, and like I said, there are a lot of things you can do for the rest of your life, but playing that high level of football is not one of those things. We're seeing it with, you know, Peyton Manning this year with his injury problems, and you see it almost every year with great players in the NFL who eventually have to hang it up. On the opposite end of that spectrum, John, is Tanner Mangum, starting his career as a freshman, put up bigger numbers than any freshman at BYU has ever done. What has impressed you with Tanner Mangum? What do you think has made him successful as a freshman? Where, and a lot of times in college, a freshman, I mean, BYU, but around the game, it's hard to succeed as a freshman. Heck, it's hard to succeed a couple months after your mission.
Yeah, well, I think Tanner came in very well prepared. He's obviously been out of it for a few years, which, you know, that can make it difficult, but I think the fact that he's been able to lean on the training and preparation that he had before his mission, you know, it tells me it must have been pretty good. I know that Tanner was an Elite 11 guy. He was a co-MVP at the Elite 11. He got to play in an all-star game. You know, you don't get that type of recognition in high school. You don't get those opportunities unless you are well-prepared. So, you know, thank goodness that Tanner had that preparation before his mission, because I think that's coming into play in what we see now. The fact that he was able to run a spread offense in college where he threw the ball around the field. You know, I think I saw a thing where he threw the ball 400 times or something his senior year. Being able to have a quarterback with that amount of reps heading out of high school makes a huge difference. I'm just going to use a story. I train quarterbacks here in Southern California, and what I see out of young high school quarterbacks, the type of offenses that they're being asked to run, the reads that they're being asked to make, the thought processes that they have to go through, that is what I was doing as a college player, what I was starting to kind of make sense for me. I'd say probably like my sophomore year is when, okay, this is starting to click more now. Well, nowadays you have high school kids that they've been running those offenses, and that, oh, this is starting to click now. They're having that happen their sophomore and junior years of high school. And I think Tanner probably was one of those guys where, hey, this is clicking for me now in high school, and now he's having an opportunity to go out there and perform really well in college. And I think it's, you know, it's been fun for me to watch. It's been fun for BYU fans to watch, and I think it gives them a glimpse of, if this is the starting point, where is this ending point going to be? This is going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, you bring something up, and I wasn't planning on asking this, but I find it fascinating. You look at the NFL and college now, and you look at completion percentages, yards per attempt, all these statistics are much higher in whole than they used to be. Do you think this has to do with that kind of coaching and that kind of starting off early, where now by the time the guys get to the NFL, someone like Tanner or Jameis Winston, they've been running a pro style offense since probably they were 14. Is that why we see maybe quarterback play in the NFL and college above and beyond what we've seen maybe in the 80s and 90s?
So here's my answer to that. I'm not going to say that the top of what we see performance-wise is changing. I think that what we're seeing is a change in entry. So I think guys are entering better prepared, and it puts them in a better opportunity to play well early. You know, I'm not going to say that a quarterback that's playing nowadays is just playing that much better than the Joe Montanas, the Steve Youngs, the Dan Marinos. But I think what is happening is when I see more and more young freshmen or young sophomores in college making a huge impact. Yeah. When I entered college football, that was not the case. If you were a freshman player playing football, and I was one of a handful my freshman year, most of us guys were out there playing in an offense that we hadn't really played a lot in before. That was new. You're running this now college spread system that you always, you know, you were excited to be a part of, but you weren't really running that in high school. Well, now with the advancement in video technology, with advances in information, with the connections now where high school coaches are being allowed to come into college programs and see what they're doing and then adapt that to their high school team, I just think it goes down to repetitions. Guys didn't have a ton of repetitions in spread college systems when they entered college. You know, some guys did, but it was rare. Now you see the majority of guys that are being highly recruited into college, they have that many reps. So now you take somebody that has that type of reps in college, and let's say you put them in a program that's now throwing the ball a ton into college. Think of all the reps they get at practice. Think of all the reads they're making, the decision-making, the schemes that they have to know. That just gets multiplied on top of itself. So now when they enter the NFL, they have 4 to 5 times as many reps as guys did in the past. So that's why I think when they enter, they're better prepared. Now, what happens once they enter? Now it's all across the board, because I do know sometimes so many reps in a certain attack that basically your spread college air raid attack, that can at times be detrimental, because what they're asked to do in that type of system is a little bit different than what they're asked to do in an NFL pro style system. And then having that many reps at something can at times be a disadvantage, because you're so programmed to do things and see things one way, and then you're asked to change, and that can also be difficult. But it has made an impact on how quickly somebody can play and play well.
Yeah, I, you know, before having you on, I was looking at your college stats, John, and you can see a massive improvement year to year from freshman to sophomore, and then your junior year, I think things really clicked. And like you said, that was the norm back when you played, and before that, with freshman and sophomore quarterbacks, you would expect a lot of struggle. Nowadays, the opposite. You put in a freshman, people kind of assume you're going to get a Cardale Jones or a Jameis Winston, when that's probably not entirely realistic. Wanted to talk about what your plans are now. What is John Beck going to be doing? I know you do, as you mentioned, work with young quarterbacks and do that. What's kind of the game plan for the Becks going forward?
So yeah, my plan right now, I'm actually moving up closer to Los Angeles. For the last 3 years in my off season, I've been working with a guy, Tom House, out of USC, and we have been training professional and collegiate quarterbacks. And so my thing moving forward is to continue doing that with him. I'm working on a couple master's degrees to kind of supplement what I'm doing with him, and kind of just try to make myself more knowledgeable, have a better background of information as it comes from, like, kind of a more educational background. And this is kind of things that Tom kind of said, hey, this can really help you separate yourself from all the rest of the guys that are former players that are getting into this, you know, type training. So, you know, that's kind of the plan. I really love the athlete. You know, for a long time I thought that I wanted to coach with a team, but I kind of realized, you know what, I like the athlete. I like the individual. I like when the athlete pursues what's my best. I want to find out the best that I can be and get it. And there's a lot of things that athletes have to deal with. You know, sometimes they get bad coaching, and sometimes they get bad information. And every athlete is trying to succeed and trying to play his best. And, you know, sometimes there needs to be somebody that helps the athlete that's not a part of the team, that's kind of somebody off to the side that can help the athlete deal with all the things they have to face from a physical and mental standpoint. And, you know, I've had a chance to see what guys like Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Carson Palmer, Aaron Rodgers, see what these guys do. And it really makes a difference when you have the right information, when you're working on the right things, you have the right process, the right mindset, all that stuff comes into play. But it's not guaranteed. It's not guaranteed that you're going to get all that stuff with your team or from the people that are around you in the team atmosphere. And I've seen players get hurt by the situations that they land in, by the coaches that they're being coached by. And you have to have somebody, if you are in one of those situations, somebody that can help you work through that. So that's the direction I'm going. I would love to consult with teams, help the coordinator, the quarterback coach, and the quarterbacks, help them all work together to do things right, help the quarterbacks handle the most difficult situations in sports, because a lot of times it's the most difficult situations that can hamper a quarterback's development. And it is a development process, and I want to help with that.
Oh, that's great. You get to, like you said, it's hard to walk away from something you've been doing all your life, and it sounds like you'll get to still participate in that. Well, John, we're really grateful you came on the program, especially I know boy number four arrived only 2 days ago, so life is busy, but we'll appreciate having you on, and we'll have you on again sometime. It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, episode 211. Matt, before we get started, I do have something to say.
I think you have a lot of things to say. That's kind of what we're here to do.
That is kind of what we're here to do. But we are sponsored. There's now, you have until Saturday at midnight, Matt, to support my epic fantasy novel, Pete Crosser. You can learn more about the novel and how to aid in crowdfunding. And it's just fun to be able to tell people you helped crowdfund something.
Isn't that one of those things that's on those lists of stuff you're supposed to do?
Yes.
Is crowdfund something?
Yes, and crowdfund a novel? I mean, it's either that or like crowdfund some high-tech thing, right? Anything else is lame.
But crowdfunding a novel is actually a pretty cool idea. That's a cool approach.
Yes, whoever thought of that was a genius. So you can go to adamjmangum.com to find out more about the novel and how to crowdfund it. Matt, since we're in geek territory, let's stay in geek land. For a tweetbag question.
Tweetbag.
From Justin Sweeney.
Sweeney!
At Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter. He asked, do you think Peter Jackson will ever do a Silmarillion? And if so, when? Matt, do you even know what he's talking about?
Can I get the question in English?
I did use English.
What is a Peter Jackson?
Come on, you know who Peter Jackson is.
Okay, what's that other thing he said?
Silmarillion?
It's what now?
It is basically all of the geeky stuff that Tolkien wrote about that world, not in the Lord of the Rings books or The Hobbit.
Oh, gotcha.
He actually took some stuff out of there, Jackson did, and filled in some holes in both of the movies. I shouldn't say I don't think he'll ever get it done, because the Hobbit movies were quite mediocre to me, and they still made bucket loads of money. And we do know that movie studios like to make bucket loads of money.
Yes, they like money.
So I shouldn't say never. I think it's... I would give it less than a 50% chance.
But you know what's crazy?
What's that?
I would probably see the movie.
Yes, because the movie would not be boring. It would be action-oriented. He doesn't know how to do anything else. So, yeah, you probably would see the movie, and now, afterwards, it'd become part of the pop culture lexicon.
I was just about to say that, but I still don't know how to say that word.
Silmarillion?
A Silmarillion?
That's close enough. It's like me trying to pronounce certain last names on the football team.
You struggle.
I do struggle.
In that territory.
Tuiloma. See?
Yeah, there you go. You're coming along.
It's only taken me like 4 years to get his name right. Matt, how was Thanksgiving? You eat a lot of turkey? Watch a lot of football?
Watched a lot of football. Ate a lot of turkey. Had some pies.
Oh, I love pie.
Oh, pumpkin pie. I could eat pumpkin pie all day. I think I've done that before.
I like pumpkin, but nothing beats a good apple. And we tried two new apple pie recipes this year, and they were fantastic.
You had two different apple pies?
Oh, brother. Are you familiar with the hot drink, Wassel?
Yes.
My wife, Kathleen, did a apple Wassel pie.
Really?
It's as good as it sounds if you like the Wassel.
Now, did the apple cranberry pie that we do in my house, was that a recipe that we got from your wife?
Yes, yes. Kathleen got it from
somebody. That thing is a winner.
Oh, that's a winner, too. We did not do that for Thanksgiving because we were trying these other two. But I think two different apple pies is now going to be kind of the norm.
You've always been an apple pie guy, though, if I remember correctly.
Well, it's because I love America and I love apple pie.
Oh, boy.
You're a communist, so you like pumpkin pie.
Pumpkin pie isn't communist?
It's the pie of the people. It's the pie of the people, of the common man. Is it the bourgeoisie or the proletariat? I can never remember.
You're thinking the proletariat.
Yeah, I can never. I was never
it's
very good
at communism. It's one or the other.
Yeah, I was never very good. Never very good at communism. Somebody made a communism joke in, like a Soviet era communism joke in work today. And I was like, you know, the wall fell like in the 80s. You know, Rocky Balboa broke that wall down in like 89.
Hey, do you know what you need to watch? It's a 30 for 30 parody that is as if Rocky IV was real.
What? How do I not know about this?
It popped up on my Facebook feed yesterday, and it's got like real ESPN personalities in it. And they've got some guy who's pretending to be an old Soviet guy, and then they got a guy and the guy might be an actual professor of history or something somewhere, but I only got to watch a couple minutes of it. Pretty hilarious. They pretty much credit Rocky Balboa with ending communism.
Oh my gosh, I see it. It will be watched.
It's good stuff.
It's on the YouTube. Just search 30 for 30 parody Rocky on YouTube or Google. Wow.
Did you just say 30 for shirty?
I have no idea what I just said.
I think that's what you said.
I doubt that's true.
Anyway, yeah, you won't be disappointed.
What you will realize is how much Sylvester Stallone has aged. Because those pictures of 1989, he was a much younger man. Have you seen Creed?
I've not seen Creed yet.
It's getting very good reviews. Percent chance you ever watch Creed.
80%.
Only 80? What's wrong with you? It's 100%.
I gotta leave some room. Gotta leave some room.
I'm not saying in the theater. I know for you that's like
1%. Oh, I'll see it. No, I'll see it. Yeah, 100%. I'll see it.
Yeah, I didn't say in the theater. I know better than to ask that.
I'll tell you this, though. As my oldest son is getting older, my chances for seeing some of these movies in the theaters is increasing exponentially.
Yes, because it becomes guy time.
Yes.
Yes.
So I'm easing him into some things. Like if Age of Ultron were to come out today, we'd probably go see it.
Yes, I took my oldest to Age of Ultron with me. Granted, it was my second time. And she is coming with me to Star Wars opening night.
Yeah, so we'll do Star Wars.
Yeah. Yeah. So all right, Matt, let's get on to our agenda here before we go too far afield. All right. Let's start off with Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
So BYU women's volleyball continues winning. Alexa continues being awesome. So more coming. And I was trying to pull that page up here. My computer is not agreeing with me. So they had some – we basically kind of swept the swept the WCC awards. Alexa Gray got Player of the Year honors for the second straight year. Amy Boswell was named Defensive Player of the Year, and Heather Olmstead, in her first year as the head coach, got Coach of Year honors. And I think it's still awesome that we have a brother and sister coaching the two volleyball teams.
That is pretty cool.
It's pretty awesome. Additionally, they had a couple other. Couple others make the first team WCC. Ciara Parker, Whitney Young Howard made it as a honorable mention. So congratulations to them. And obviously a great first year for Heather Olmstead, 26-3, 16-2 in the WCC. We're looking forward to see what they do next. Also, Cougars in the pros, Matt, with the first pick in the NFL draft. The New York Jets select Ziggy. Is he going to win Defensive Player of the Year? Probably not.
Probably not. Does he get into that conversation? Yeah, I think he gets into that conversation.
All pro? But isn't that like a given?
I think
not Pro Bowl, because everyone ends up making the Pro Bowl because of injuries or teams in the playoffs.
People bring friends to the Pro Bowl. Yeah. Whatever. But all pro, yeah, I think so. Defensive player of the year, probably not. I think you're in the right position category for defensive player of the year, but it's not going to be Ziggy.
11 and a half sacks, and obviously that massive game on Thanksgiving. What was that? 3.5 sacks. I mean, phenomenal. And you hear people talk about him, the analysts, and it's all just, you know, they think he still has upside, right?
Yep.
That we may not have seen the best yet for Ziggy Ansah. He's only 26 years old. Matt Jimmer scored 37 points in his D-League debut and a bunch of highlights. What was your first thought when you saw that?
Oh, that's awesome. You know, what I thought was fun was following on Twitter, Whitney Fredette posted something about how she hadn't seen Jimmer like really sweating in a basketball game in a long time and how excited she was to see him like really out there playing.
Yeah.
But, you know, but I think that's a good point, right? Nobody's really seen him play in a long time.
No.
And so I think it's awesome that he came out in this D-League debut and just crushed it.
Yes. And looked like.
That's got to feel good if you're Jimmer.
It looks like Jimmer of old. I asked on Twitter this question, Matt. What does Jimmer's D-League explosion mean? The options were nothing, the NBA was wrong, and something, but I'm not sure. That was the winner with 50% of the votes, then nothing, 32, and the NBA was wrong, 18. Even for BYU fans, Matt, I think most BYU fans think the window has closed on his NBA career. Does this performance change any of that in your mind?
I think it does. I'm probably in the something not sure category. You know, we've talked about Jimmer before, and I think what I've been saying in the past is that it'd probably be a good idea for him to explore some options to play abroad if he really wants to contribute to a team. But looking at what he did here, you know, where he's got, and I know this is the D League, I know it's not the same thing and all that, but 37 is a lot of points.
It is a lot of points.
And I think that when you look at how he was shooting the ball, shooting percentages and all of that, I mean, he was playing defense. You know, he's stealing the ball and taking it back for the score. So I think it means something. Now, does this mean somebody who hasn't had a look at him? I mean, he's been around a little bit. You know, he's a handful of teams. Does this mean somebody decides to pick him up and put him in there? You know, I saw somebody else comment on Twitter something about, you know, the Sixers should pick him up. You know, they'll win a couple of games. You know, just put him out there on the floor. But so will he get maybe another chance if he can continue to really perform like this? Will he catch somebody's eye? Maybe. For me, what this says is that the talent is still there. His shooting ability is still there. It's just a matter of finding a good fit, which he's not done so far at the NBA.
Yeah, unfortunately, just it has not worked. And, you know, we've talked about some of the whys in the past, but, you know, going forward, best of luck. We wish him best of luck and keep dominating the D-League till somebody decides to give him another chance. Matt, there was a football game this past weekend, and let's talk about that victory against Utah State. What was your biggest takeaway?
Big guy touchdowns. Love it.
Yeah.
Love big man touchdowns.
Yes, yes, it is. It is pretty awesome.
But really what I'm talking about there, you know, and I think the reason I bring that up is they need these guys at that point in the game, right there before the end of the first half. This team needed something to spark them. You know, they just felt a little bit flat, and I think being able to dig deep and find that and do that the way they did, I think was big and says a little bit about the resilience of this team. And we've talked about some of that in the past, the resilience of this team in some other situations, but I think that's kind of part of what I got out of what we saw last weekend.
Yeah, that's a great point, Matt, because with 3 minutes left to go in the half, you're down 21-10. Offense has been pretty weak to that point. And then all of a sudden, you get a 72-yard touchdown pass on blown coverage, and then a defensive touchdown with no time left on the clock. Just a phenomenal way. I still think we win the game without that, but it was probably going to have to be a pretty close win. I just think we're a better team than Utah State at this point. So my big takeaway, Matt, was, and we're going to get into this a little later, is there were a lot of fans on Twitter. You would have thought BYU had lost, right? They won 51-28 against a decent team. Not a great team, but an okay team. And it was just like, hate the play calling. Defense is terrible. And it's like, we won. What is wrong with you people?
But
like,
you know,
enjoy it for 10 minutes.
Now, and I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you, right? I mean, a win's a win and they all count. Right. Yes. At the end of the day, that's really all that matters.
And this wasn't a close win. It wasn't a sloppy win.
But I think it felt close to people because of the way the first half played out. And the other thing that really, I think, drives people nuts is this bend, don't break deal, right? I mean, the defense gave up 445 yards.
To a very mediocre offense.
And you look at, a couple of those plays where it's on option plays and nobody's accounting for the quarterback. And that shows up a couple of times. So I think there are some things in there that make fans feel like it was closer than it was. Or, but I think the bend don't break thing is really what drives people crazy. I mean, they ran 88. Utah State ran 88 offensive plays.
Yeah.
That's a long time for the defense to be on the field. And I know we talk about how that wears on the defense being down and stuff. But if you watch Twitter while that's going on, it wears people out. It drives fans crazy. They feel like we're doing something wrong because we can't get the defense off the field. But really, when you look at it, the defensive approach here that Bronco seems to be employing here is this bend, don't break. And you stay on the field, get up 23 first downs, but don't give up enough points to lose the game.
Well, and the other thing was we adjusted to some of it in the second half. I think it was hard for BYU to prepare for this one because you didn't know who the QB was going to be, and you didn't know how healthy Chucky would be if he was the QB. Would he even run, right, dealing with the injuries? I understand the frustration, but, I mean, people got to chill out, man. I mean, a win's a win, and Utah State is not – we talked about this last week. They're not Utah State from the 90s. This is a decent team, a good program. They were a little down this year compared to where they've been the last few years. And we were on the road. I mean, you're not going to walk in there and win that one 50-7.
Right.
That's not realistic. It's just not going to happen. I agree. The defense is not good. I mean, we talked about this last week as well. This is the worst defense in many ways that Bronco may have ever had. And our thoughts that the defense was going to get materially better than last year by him calling the plays, it's just not borne out.
It's not come to fruition. But, what's funny is nobody's screaming about Bronco shouldn't be calling the plays.
No, even though statistically this is a very similar defense. What they're not as good at is different. I mean, last year it was a problem of we couldn't get any pressure on the quarterback and we gave up big pass plays, which that's happened a little bit. This year, it's the rushing defense. I mean, we give 4.6 yards per carry when you take out sacks. That's the worst Broncos ever had.
And we gave up 8 third down conversions, and it feels like a lot of those were on, third and five or longer situations.
And that is also not the hallmark of a Bronco defense either.
That's right.
So I understand frustrations. I just think sometimes they're a little misplaced. Matt, Harvey Longy got some carries. It was kind of, I don't want to say come out of nowhere because he did a little bit of that, earlier in the season before he got hurt. But I was just curious, what's your take? Are you pro Harvey Longy getting carries? He had 3 for 15 yards, or do you think we already have enough running backs? You don't really need to you know, what to do with it.
Oh, I'm all about it. Give him the rock, because he's picking up first downs. You know, and he's got that crazy look in his eyes when he comes out there, and I love it. Now, you know, what I thought was really interesting is he comes out and his jersey's just in pieces.
Right.
Right. And you're just kind of thinking to yourself, well, so clearly he's not being held while he's playing defense. Right.
No.
Because, right. And, you know, I mean, this is not a tearaway jersey. But the only concern there for me is durability and injuries. I mean, I'd hate to see him get hurt in one of those situations, because right now, I mean, we need really all the help we can get on defense.
Yes, I agree with you. But and long term, like next year, with the depth we'll have at running back, I wouldn't be surprised if he doesn't get much.
No, you know, I don't think they plug him in those situations.
If you've got Squally Canada and Jamal and Francis Bernard, I don't know that you need him. I think they just got frustrated with everybody not named Algie Brown. You know,
yeah.
So they wanted to give somebody else a chance. Hine's clearly not at 100% physically still. You know, not that he got much action in there. So Matt, I did ask on Twitter if the folks thought he should be a two-way player, and the results were, let me get there, 53% yes, 33% no, and then a 14% maybe. I'm kind of with you. I'm kind of in that maybe camp. It depends on what the needs are. I just right now at linebacker, if he gets hurt, that would be a bad day.
Yeah, and like you said, next year we probably don't need him back there.
No, barring injury.
I'm not even sure, depending on what happens here in the bowl game, and I think we're going to get to that, we may not even need him back there in the bowl game.
Yeah, so let's get to the bowl game, Matt. BYU today, breaking news on the Rise and Shout podcast. They are in the Las Vegas Bowl, accepted the invitation earlier today. We're recording this on Wednesday evening. Yes, we are recording during the Utah basketball game. We'll get to that in a second. But Matt, what were your initial thoughts when you heard the Las Vegas Bowl?
I like that. I mean, you know, we've talked about when we do our annual probability you'll watch this game, bowl game extravaganza. You know, we always joke about how the Christmas Eve game is an easy watch, right? Because the kids are in bed and you've got stuff to do. But so I was kind of thinking at one point, I thought, oh, well, if we get that game, then, you know, then I know what I'll be doing while I'm, you know, setting things up. But Las Vegas Bowl is great. I think it's an easy one to get fans out to. You play a good Pac-12 opponent. You know, it is interesting, you know, for all the clamoring that we've done to get out of the Mountain West Conference and all this, that you end up back at the Las Vegas Bowl, potentially playing Utah, who was also trying to clamor to get out of the Mountain West Conference. And now here we are. We're all back in Las Vegas, you know, at the Royal Purple, formerly Vizio, formerly whatever it was, Las Vegas Bowl.
Yeah, who even knows, Matt? So the four opponents that the Deseret News story listed today were Cal, Washington State, USC, and Utah. What I think has some fans confused is they see on ESPN it's the number 6 team from the Pac-12, and everyone's trying to – that's not how it actually works, right? The Pac-12 and the bowl get together and they kind of figure things out, right? They want good matchups. You know, there may be preferences to either, you know, I mean, for all we know, Utah is saying yes or no to the Pac-12 to play us. And I think if they say no, the Pac-12 will say fine. You know, and obviously USC, if they win the conference championship here in a bit, then that changes. They're no longer a candidate. But Matt, listing them in the order that you would want to play them, who do you have among those four? Who's your number one?
My number one there is USC.
Mm, okay.
I'm not going to lie to you. I think that game, that matchup, and a victory there would be really meaningful for the team.
Oh, yes.
Now, whether or not we could beat USC, that may be a separate conversation.
Let's just put it this way. We'd have to score 40-something points to beat them.
Yeah, because I don't think we'd slow them down.
No, I don't think our defense would slow them down. I would also pick USC for very similar reasons. My next choice would be Utah. Who would your next choice be?
My next choice would be Utah.
The next best team among that group, and also it'll be kind of cool to basically have only taken 1 year less off from the rivalry, you know.
And I'm actually only excited about it if they wear red and we wear royal blue.
I don't think we're wearing royal blue in the bowl.
You don't think if we go to the Las Vegas Bowl to play Utah, then somebody's not going to think about wearing royal blue?
No, that's a good point. Yeah, somebody
royal
might do
blue
that.
At the royal purple Las Vegas Bowl.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And royal purple, we looked that up before the podcast. Motor oil, synthetic
there you
motor
go.
Oil. So Matt, who'd be next? I'd be Washington State, and then Cal last. What about you?
I'm a push either way on that one. Both of those are equally mediocre. I don't even know what the word mediocre. I'm looking for is, but mediocrely interesting to me.
Better chance we beat either of them than USC or Utah.
Yep.
So there's that benefit. The Mike Leach thing is kind of fun. So that's kind of why I put Washington State above Cal. And we all know my feelings about Cal. I like them about as much as I like Stanford.
And San Diego State.
No, they're not in that class, though. That's unfair. They're not in that class. San Diego State and Stanford have a very unique place in my heart. That being said, I want it to be USC or Utah. I have a feeling, though, it's going to be Washington State or Cal.
Yep.
So, but either way, if we beat one of those teams, it's a good win on if you go 10-3 and you beat, a Pac-12 team in the bowl, I think that's good.
Given everything that this team's gone through this year, you know, with the injuries and, and the schedule they were up against, I think a 10-win season with a solid victory in a bowl game, I think you have to be pleased with that. I mean,
yeah,
you know, you still got to remember, I mean, there's some things about this team to be excited about. And I know people are, you know, I think people feel there's a contingency of fans that aren't excited about this season, that don't feel like a 9 or 10 win season is good enough given the potential and where everybody was at the beginning of the year. But you know, you look at a rookie quarterback who came in and is just killing it in the red zone or the blue zone, I guess. You know, the offense has been worked pretty well for the most part. You know, defensively we've struggled some, but at the end of the day, I mean, that's a 10-win season here. You beat Cal or Washington State in a bowl game. That's nothing to be ashamed of.
Matt, this is the best offense in yards per play that we've had since Max Hall graduated. This is better than any Taysom offense.
That's crazy.
Statistically. Now, people will say maybe it's different. They ran a lot more plays, and that's fine. I get it. But in the end, yard per play is how you can judge without getting into advanced statistics. That's the one that isn't affected by the fact that you had 85 plays a game, right?
Right.
Where, you know, if you look at yards per game, this isn't close to the last 2 years because we were running – so many more plays. This was a good, efficient offense. Is it the best offense BYU's ever had? Not close. But it was way better than I thought it would be with a freshman quarterback.
We got a freshman quarterback who threw for 3,000 yards.
And we have a running game that averaged, if you take out the sacks, 5 yards a carry, which is the best we've had besides that 2013 team, where Jamal and Taysom, you know, and other, you know, others, it was a Jamal and Taysom show, right?
If you back up time and say, hey, you're going to throw, you'll have your starting quarterback will throw for 3,000 yards and your running game is going to average 5+ yards a carry.
Oh, you would have.
Would you have believed that Taysom and Jamal were both hurt?
No. No, I wouldn't have believed it. I would have thought the running game was going to collapse into nothingness. It was going to be a total weakness. And there were times where it got shut down, against better running defenses for sure, that I think Taysom and Jamal wouldn't have gotten shut down. And obviously, you know, Tanner had the black eyes of Michigan and San Jose State where he struggled. But for a freshman quarterback to complete 61% of his passes, which was the most for a BYU quarterback, the highest completion rate we've had in a season since Independence started, again, since Max Hall, I think you got to look at this offensively. This was a successful season.
Yep.
I mean, it wasn't a world beater, but with everything factored in, this is a successful season. Speaking of the bowl, Matt, it turns out Squally Canada is eligible to play in the bowl.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I didn't even think about this.
Over under touches for Squally Canada, 5.5.
I'm going to take, I'm probably taking the under.
I am also going to take the under. I won't be shocked if it's over that, but I think Algy has earned the right to do that, and I don't know what kind of shape Squally is in. I would guess he's probably in pretty good shape, but there's shape and then there's game shape. Maybe between now and the bowl in the weeks of practice that BYU gets, there'll be something. But I think he'll be in it, but I don't know how much he'll touch the ball.
I wonder if he'll be used in kind of a change of pace type setting like they've been doing with Longy, yeah. or something. But I think somewhere in the neighborhood of 5 carries is probably about right.
Yeah. Yeah, so Matt, let's move on to national college football stuff. Mark, oh gosh, now I still don't know. He just got ricked, right?
Yeah, he got ricked.
Mark Rick got fired by Georgia. Rumor has it as of this evening that he is. I always think it's a bad day when you fire your coach and they're hired within a week.
Yeah.
You know, like if the Eagles fire Chip Kelly, I guarantee you another NFL team will hire him right away. That's why if you fire a guy and he's going to get hired right away, you may be making a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
He went 9-3 this year, 5-3 in the SEC, lost 3 SEC games. This is a guy that has won a couple of SEC championships, which is, you know, what, 3? 3 or 2? 2. I think he's got 2.
I think 2, yeah.
He obviously had that 2002 season when they were 13-1. That's his best season. Matt, Nick Saban thinks the college football world has lost their mind. Do you agree with Nick that this is craziness?
Yeah, it is craziness. I mean, especially these SEC teams and these athletic directors, they all think they're going to go out and hire the next Nick Saban. They're setting up these crazy expectations for success. You know, it's I think that, you know, the fans and people that want Ricked out of Georgia are looking at thinking, oh, well, here's a guy. Yeah, sure. He's had, you know, and what has he been there? 15 years and had 10 win seasons or
yes,
something.
Yes.
Always gone to a bowl game.
Yes.
And people are looking at that saying, oh, well, the program has plateaued. This is as far as Mark Richt can take us. So it's time for us to move on. But, Mike, you know, the question is, who's coming through that door that you believe is going to take you to that next level? You know, unless you're going to go get, you know, maybe somebody like a Chip Kelly, you know, or somebody to come back and coach for you, or you've stolen Nick Saban from Alabama, I don't know what you think you're accomplishing by swapping this guy out, you know. And it's the same. I feel the same thing with this, with all the Les Miles stuff. That stuff was crazy. The Les Miles thing, I think, boiled down to more of a power play between some boosters and stuff that just don't like him because he's a little weird. But I really wonder how much that plays into it. But I think that the expectations around some of these programs just don't make any sense.
So
there's only one Nick Saban.
He has a 7.38 winning percentage, Matt. He's one of 5 coaches to get to 140 wins in their first 15 years. Listen, they have not been as good the last few years as they had towards the beginning. But I'm with you. It's just, who are you going to get? Chip Kelly's not going to leave the NFL to go coach Georgia. Nothing personal, Bulldog fans. But that is not happening. You're not getting one of those guys. Georgia is not that place. There are like 5 of those places in college football. Meyer's coached 2 of them in Florida and Ohio State. Obviously LSU is not one of those places because that's not where that's not where Saban finished, right?
Yeah, but that's a little bit weird because Saban decided to take his talents to the NFL and it didn't pan out.
Yeah, I get that. But is LSU the destination for, in the SEC?
Not right now.
Not right now. It's not the destination. And I just sit here and I think it's crazy. The Miles stuff, Rick, I get frustration at the end of a season when it doesn't go as well as you thought as a fan or a booster. I just think you got to remember the alternative can be a lot worse. You know, the alternative can be worse. Now, granted, they fired Jim Donnan, and he had been 40-19. This isn't new for them. They have fired guys before that were pretty decent. But
well, like Les Miles is the winningest coach in LSU history.
I know.
You know, and they're ready to run the guy out the door. I just feel like
and Rick is number two. At Georgia.
If they look and they say, okay, listen, we're tired of 10-win seasons. We want something more than that. Firing your coach and trying to go find somebody else to do it. Maybe you go and find when Florida got Urban Meyer out of Utah or something, right? Like that's the guy you're hoping you're going to go find.
Yes.
But I feel like that's like the flashy thing to do. We're going to fire our coach and go get a new one. When there's probably other incremental things you can do, you know, maybe instead of spending a little bit more money on a different coach, you take that extra money and you spend it somewhere else in your program to try and help you recruit a slightly better player or get some facility upgrades or whatever it is. I just feel like these programs don't spend enough time exploring what the impact of those other options are, because if you're the AD and you got boosters breathing down your neck, the easy thing to do is to just pull the trigger on firing the coach. It's big, it's dramatic, it's drastic, and it probably buys you more time. It buys you another 3 years.
Yes, because I don't know if it buys you 3 years anymore.
Not anymore, but
it used to. But look at Texas right now. It doesn't buy you 3 years anymore. So Matt, let's talk a little bit about one up, one down. We've done this. Anybody among the college football playoff teams that has impressed you?
I was really impressed with Stanford.
Yeah, they looked really good.
And the way they pulled out that win, I think Notre Dame's a very good team. You know, I think that they're right up there in the mix, in my opinion, as far as, you know, getting into that top four. I think they belong in that discussion. And the way that so I think that was big. And the way that game ended, the way that it all got done, I was very impressed with that. And I think the unfortunate piece to it is I don't think Stanford has a – I don't think they get in. I don't see a scenario where they get in. But right now, that's kind of the team I feel like is a team up.
Yeah, there's a scenario, but it's just an unlikely one.
So much would have to happen.
Clemson loses to North Carolina. Michigan State – I don't know. One of the Big Ten teams, Michigan State or Iowa, is getting in. The question is, if Clemson loses, does Stanford trump a two-loss Stanford trump a one-loss North Carolina?
Who has a conference championship.
He's got a conference championship. Or can they trump a one-loss Ohio State, who doesn't, but they've only got the one loss to Michigan State? You know, I'm with you. It's unlikely that they make it. I'm going to talk about Clemson. I don't think they're that good. I really don't. They haven't played anybody. They beat up South Carolina. Whoopity-doo. They're my one down. I still think there's a decent chance they lose to North Carolina. They're favored and should be. But I think there's a decent chance. You know, they're favored by 5, so nobody's thinking they're that much better than North Carolina. And I think they will be if they make the college football playoff. They could be as much as a two touchdown underdog, depending on who they play.
Yeah, and I actually feel the same way about Clemson. I mean, you look at, you know, they're going to play North Carolina in this game, and as much talk as there is about the possibility that they lose that seems to communicate to me that nobody's supremely confident that they're, you know, that they really are the best team in the country, right? There's a crazy scenario here, right, where Iowa gets in. Let's say Iowa wins the Big Ten championship game. Iowa squeaks in there undefeated as the 4 seed. and beats Clemson. Next thing you know, this Iowa team that's going to play really one game before that all year is playing for a national championship against Oklahoma or something. You know, yeah. I mean, that's a crazy scenario.
Yeah, and you know, people will shout back at me. They beat Florida State. I'm not impressed. I don't think Florida State's that good this year. And they beat Notre Dame. That's your claim to fame, right, on your schedule. You beat Notre Dame, yep. Who's a very good team. But, you know, Miami's down. They struggled against South Carolina this last year. This last game. I'm just not super impressed. I think they get destroyed by Michigan State, Alabama. I don't know about Iowa yet. We'll see after Saturday.
Nobody knows about Iowa yet.
Yes, but I mean, if they end up going in and beating Michigan State, then you say, all right, you earned it. You're 13-0, and you played one of the best teams in the country in your championship game.
I feel like if they squeak that win out and they end up playing Clemson in the first round and then they win that game, I feel like that's going to give us a false sense of who they are.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to put Iowa down, right? I think we still won't know how good Iowa is in that scenario until they get to that championship game.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you. So, Matt, but before we leave, we're going to talk a little bit of basketball on this show. Not much. The Utah game is ongoing. It is. I was tracking it, but I try to listen to what you say, Matt.
What? Were you saying something?
Yeah. That's not true. Utah is killing us at halftime, 51-28.
At least we have that.
So at least we have that. While I'm editing it, I'll listen to the radio while I edit. So, Matt, good win versus Belmont. We needed that. Great second half. The big news, of course, is Kyle Collinsworth gets his record-setting triple-double.
He's a machine. He's like Ivan Drago.
He is like Ivan Drago.
He's a machine.
He is a machine. Are you saying he takes performance-enhancing drugs?
Whoa.
That's what Ivan Drago did.
Whoa.
Do you think he would stand over Wiltshire or something and go, if he dies, he dies?
Yeah, I think he might.
That would be awesome. And he needs to do the really poor Russian accent, too.
And I think that he could.
Oh, I think he's Big Russia, for heaven's sakes.
I think he could. He could do all the lines in Russian. He'd do them better than Dolph Lundgren did.
Oh, that wouldn't be hard, though, would it?
No.
Since you've spoken Russian, you have watched that movie, right?
Yes.
And it's terrible.
Listen,
isn't it?
Who has not seen that movie in the last 15 years?
I have to ask, if you haven't, what is wrong with you? Go watch it now. Like, stop this podcast and go watch Rocky IV.
Really, right, what now you need to do is you need to watch all the Rocky movies and then go see Creed. That's what you need to do.
Oh my gosh, you just gave me my holiday activity. Well, I'm off for a week. I'm watching, and by all, you do mean that Rocky V doesn't exist, right?
No. You're watching Rocky V because that's going to help you appreciate Creed that much more.
Okay.
Because it sounds like Creed is a good film.
Did you like Balboa? I liked Balboa. It wasn't great, but it was okay.
It was better than Rocky V.
Well, I mean, that's grading on a curve there, buddy. That's grading on the curve. Well, Matt, it has been a podcast. We remind you, go to adamjmanningham.com to find out about my upcoming crowdfunded epic fantasy novel, P-Crosser. Also go to cougarfan.com to get all of your Cougar news. Go to iTunes and say we're doing an awesome job. 5-star reviews only, please. And next week we'll be back. We'll talk a lot of basketball next week. We'll start previewing. We should have an opponent for the bowl game as well, so we can talk a little bit about that. Thank you for downloading and listening, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!